You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The Farm Service Agency committees enable producers to make important decisions on how federal programs are administered locally to best serve local community needs, make determinations on hiring decisions, or assist with local education or outreach efforts.
Bill Beam is administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency.
The Farm Service Committee members are local agricultural producers who help ensure fair and equitable administration of the FSA farm programs in their local county, or in some cases, multi-county jurisdiction.
What about eligibility requirements?
The FSA county committees are comprised of 3 to 11 elected members from local administrative areas, each serving a 3-year term. Nearly 7,700 producers serve on more than the 2,200 FSA county committees nationwide. To be eligible to serve on the FSA County Committee, a person must participate or cooperate in a program administered by the FSA, be eligible to vote in a county committee election, and reside in a local administrative area up for the election.
So FSA is accepting nominations right now for the 2026 county committee elections and will accept those nominations through August 3rd. Now, producers, again, may be nominated if they participate or cooperate in a USDA program and live in a local administrative area up for election this year. Cooperating producers include those who have provided farm or ranch information to FSA, even if they have not yet received program benefits. Farm family living expenses climbing above $100,000 for the first time. It's adding another squeeze for crop producers already facing lean returns. David Widmars with Agricultural Economic Insights and says Kansas Farm Management Association data shows family living costs jumped 12% in 2 years. Average expenses? Well, they increased by nearly $11,000 since 2023. And since 2020, the category up more than $28,000, or more than 40%. Widmar says challenges knowing what a normal annual increase should be. Says since 2000, family living expenses have increased an average of 4.4% per year, but actual changes rarely match that average. Speaking of average, more beef, now grading prime. It's changing price spreads and quality signals for cattle producers. Texas A&M economist Dr. David Anderson says prime beef has more than doubled the share of grading select during the past 2 months. So more than 17% of graded beef reached prime in 5 of the last 6 years. Select, just 8.2% over the same period. Last year, prime averaged 13%, select averaging 12%. Anderson says value-based marketing, longer days on feed, heavier finished weights, and strong demand for higher quality beef have encouraged more prime production. Choice remains mostly steady at 71.7% of graded beef. It's Agriculture Today.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express water wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express water wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express water wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
This provides us a roadmap for the most important regional supply chains in the world. And I'm excited.
Iowa Representative Randy Feenstra at a recent House Ag Committee hearing on the future of the USMCA.
To revisit and to reset this trade deal is paramount. I think it's just a great thing that we're doing. So that being said, one of our areas that makes USMCA incredibly strong for our farmers is the facilitation of biotechnology and the SPS chapters that prevent non-science-based trade barriers. However, as we look for targeted improvements in these chapters, there are opportunities to better align pesticide maximum residue limits with Codex standards and further enforce barriers to trade biotechnology. Ms. Beyer, could you quickly explain the importance of USMCA assessing critical inputs for your farm and the benefits of maintaining strong SPS biotechnology provisions?
Certainly, if we can be more consistent among the three trading partners without impeding everyone's regulatory authorities. You know, on the farm, everything we do from the start to finish is highly regulated, and so we rely on experts at EPA. Certainly, we rely on experts, you know, with the FDA for our final products. And so our systems are heavily integrated with science, and that doesn't need to be replicated. It doesn't need to be concurrently run in other countries to accept our products and to accept our varieties. And so as much as these systems can be efficient, and I think one of the interesting parts about USMCA is the commitment to sharing information and transparency. Yep. And that's something that we benefit from.
I agree. I mean, sharing of information, and as long as it's factual, right? I mean, as long as it's research-tested, research-based. And to me, that is the critical criteria for all three countries that we embrace. And hopefully through the reset and through this review, we can continue to go down that path. You know, Mexico is consistently one of the most important export markets for Iowa pork producers, which is why maintaining a fair and rule-based trade relationship is so important. Mexico is one of the most important markets for the world when it comes to U.S. pork. Recently, we've seen Mexico initiate anti-dumping and countervailing duties, AD and CVD investigation into U.S. hams and shoulders. While every country has a right to enforce trade laws, these investigations must be based on facts, not used for political leverage. Mr. Shump, can you discuss why maintaining a fair, rule-based trade relationship under USMCA is critical for Americans' pork producers?
And to be clear, we view Mexico's investigation into those pork products as spurious. We don't see there being any merit to those claims. Right. And our members and the industry has had to undertake expensive process to address Mexico's concerns. But in general, maintaining USMCA is going to be critical for our pork market access, and we believe that USMCA has the consultative mechanisms in place that can address any concerns, and they should be done in those ways, not through this type of an investigation.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Absolutely. And if I think 40% of our export in the pork industry goes to Mexico. I mean, it's very significant.
That is correct.
Yeah, so we got to maintain it, but we also have to work with them to not have these issues come up. I got 46 seconds left. Quick, Mr. Lockney. Talk about Mexico and U.S. dairy. This is an opportunity for us. You know, we've always talked about Canada, but U.S. and Mexico have a great dairy opportunity here. Can you just talk about that very briefly?
I would say it has had a great opportunity and continues to see $2.5 billion of dairy exports are going into the Mexican market, and it's one that we want to continue to preserve and also try to offset any type of restrictions that we would have from European trade agreements when it comes to common cheese names.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Today I want to talk to you about the economic cost of a bale of hay.
Dr. Eric DeVeest is an Oklahoma State Extension agricultural economist breaking down the numbers for hay.
One of the things that we see frequently is producers are not thinking about what are all the costs that go into a bale of hay. Of course, people know about the baling cost, but if you bale it yourself, what should that cost be? Well, we recommend putting in what are the custom rates right now in your area, because that's your opportunity cost. In other words, if you didn't bale your own hay, how much could you get for baling somebody else's hay? For baling a round of hay, a 5x6 round, 1,400 pounds, we could expect to spend around $28 to have that done custom for the cutting, raking, and baling. So we use that to represent the opportunity cost of putting up a bale of hay. Then we have land charge into that. We need to be charging something for ourselves, for our own land. Even if it's ours and we're not paying rent to somebody, we're de facto paying rent to ourselves internally. And so about $25, 20 to 25, maybe 30 for more productive grounds. And then one of the most overlooked numbers is the cost of the nutrients in that bale of hay. So for native hay, prairie hay, we typically don't apply nitrogen. So we'll ignore that for a prairie bale of hay, but there's phosphorus in that bale. So you're looking at about 2.5 pounds of phosphorus in that bale of hay. Most of our soils in Oklahoma, a large percentage of them, are deficient in phosphorus. If I don't replace that over time, I'm going to affect that plant community down there. I'm probably going to get some lower quality forages. That 2.5 pounds of phosphorus is going to cost you about $5 plus per round for a 1,400 pound bale of hay. If we have 1.1 tons to the acre for our prairie hay, we're looking at about $51 a bale for a 1,400 pound bale of prairie hay, native hay. And if you look at prices right now, you'll see them all over the place, $35 to $55, depending on how big they are, the quality of the hay. And so at $50, if you're selling that for $50, you're pretty close to break even economically. But what that means is you're actually turning an accounting profit on it, because a number of those costs, including the phosphorus and the land charge, might just be internal. And so you're doing all right if you're getting about $50 a round. Less than that, you better to come back and look at, see whether you're actually that sustainable over time. Bermuda, this bale has about 3.4 pounds of phosphorus in that. And then we also are going to put nitrogen on that field. The nitrogen that's in the bale of Bermuda hay is only a fraction of what actually gets put down, because you're going to lose nitrogen to volatilization, and then you're going to get a lot of tissue growth that's not harvestable. The lower part of the stems, the roots, for example. So a typical rate would be around 200 pounds of actual and per acre per year for Bermuda. So there's about $13 of nitrogen per bale that's applied, even though that's not, there's less nitrogen in the bale. And then we got almost $7 of phosphorus in a bale of Bermuda hay. So, and we're probably going to put herbicide down if we're trying to sell it as weed-free hay. It comes down to you're around $58 to $60 a bale for Bermuda hay. If you look at the hay markets right now, look at what's advertised out there. You'll see a lot of Bermuda hay in that $60 range right now.
Learn more online, sunup.okstate.edu. It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The U.S. dairy industry has faced persistent challenges from Canada due to their unwillingness to implement their tariff-free quotas in a way that allows full market access for U.S. dairy farmers.
At a recent hearing on the future of the USMCA, chairman of the House Ag Committee from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson.
In 2025, the U.S. access negotiated under the yogurt and buttermilk quota was 4,135 metric tons, but only 382 metric tons were actually filled, representing just 9% of the utilization Canada had already committed to. What specific outcomes is the U.S. dairy industry seeking to create a more fair and balanced trade agreement with Canada? Mr. Licky?
While we see that there are opportunities to improve upon what was negotiated as a part of the USMCA, I think one resolution that comes top of mind is for the quota that was given is to allow the access and full use of that quota and to provide more enforcement for the non-use of such quota.
Ms. Solon, your testimony talks about the U.S.-Canada softwood lumber dispute and discusses industry interests in addressing the dispute resolution process outlined in Chapter 10. Can you walk us through the current state of the conversations and what you expect to see as it relates to USMCA?
Currently, the USMCA Chapter 10 dispute settlement system is a panel process that seats three members. Sometimes they're three from Canada, sometimes they're two from Canada, one from the U.S., sometimes they're two from the U.S., one from Canada. But what that results in is that the panels are often more political than they are adjudicatory, and they can compel federal agencies to change the manner in which they enforce U.S. laws without a meaningful appeals process. The system is also incredibly slow and has been the source of significant delays in this particular dispute. The delays to date we're around to 10 years in now, and the United States has collected close to $8 billion, but the administration is unable to liquidate these funds into the U.S. Treasury until the Chapter 10 disputes have been completed. We don't even have panels seated for many of them. So we have submitted comments to USTR and have engaged with USTR directly on this request to change Chapter 10.
Ms. Byers, in your testimony, you discussed presidential decree signed by former Mexican President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador. This decree called for a phase-out of genetically engineered corn as well as a phase-out of glyphosate despite a lack of scientific evidence to support these decisions. This policy would have been harmful to many U.S. and Canadian farmers. How did USMCA dispute settlement process serve as a mechanism to resolve this conflict between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico?
As a corn grower, I am aware of those events as we are in the industry. It's my understanding that the U.S. at first consulted with Mexico with no resolution and then was able to request trade dispute panel to deal with the issue and that Canada supported that initiative. The panel convened. It was able to review scientific evidence, legal arguments, and written testimony, and was able to come up with a plan for compliance with Mexico to have that issue resolved in a relatively timely fashion. So what we have seen in that sort of example is, despite prior testimony, we were able to move this issue out of the political arena into a rule-based legal process that utilized an independent panel and that supplied consequences if the country violated the commitments, and that the trade agreement becomes a path to compliance because there's that risk of losing the benefit of all those beneficial terms in the agreement.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
On demanding job sites, you need equipment that works as hard as your crew. The Wiley Express Water Wagon is built for construction, industrial, and municipal use, delivering dependable water application for dust abatement, fire protection, and fresh water supply. The Express Water Wagon helps keep your operations safe, compliant, and productive. The Wiley Express Water Wagon, built for the toughest jobs on the ground. Trust Wiley Sprayers, proudly built in Texas. Visit us online at WileySprayers.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a bad news, good news story, I guess.
Oklahoma State livestock economist Dr. Darrell Peel talking about New World screwworm now in the U.S.
You know, part of it is we've been anticipating this for a long time. So from a broader market perspective, especially the futures markets, it was almost a sense of relief. And so, you know, we've been waiting for this shoe to fall for many months now, and it finally has. So we got past that, and now we got to deal with the reality. And so, you know, there is good and bad news in this. Broadly speaking, there's not a lot of big market impacts. That's the good news, but there's certainly a lot of impacts for the folks that are directly affected and everybody around that area.
There are some shocking headlines out there, so what's this mean for consumers?
Beef consumers should have absolutely no concerns about this. This is not an animal disease, an infectious disease. It's a pest. It affects specific animals. Doesn't affect meat. Even infected animals, if they're treated early and recover, their meat's fine. There's other animals are not impacted. So there's no impact on meat. There's no food or food safety issues that should concern consumers at all.
So that's the demand side. What about the supply side?
You know, it really doesn't. That's the thing from a supply standpoint. I mean, this is going to affect a few animals, relatively small numbers. You know, there may be some losses of animals in this, depending on how big of a thing it turns into. But overall, it's not going to impact overall cattle inventories or beef production. So from a supply and a demand standpoint, there's really no major market impacts to this that should affect the market, broadly speaking.
What about economic impacts?
You know, the impacts, the bad news part of this, of course, is producers that are affected, the regions that are affected are going to face a lot of costs and management headaches. It takes a lot to get around this thing, both at the private level, individual producers and the industry, broadly speaking, in those areas especially, as well as the state, local, and federal officials that are involved in this. So there's going to be a lot of costs, a lot of management headaches to this thing that are a big impact. It'll be a combination of private cost. Individual producers that are affected will certainly see, and you know, they may lose a few animals, but at any rate, there's going to be a lot of cost to monitoring and you know, and treating animals and staying ahead of this thing, as well as obviously the public efforts from the federal level down trying to get this back under control. We've been here before. It's been a long time. We had many years successfully controlling this pest. It's back now. It slipped by us, so we've got to deal with it again. So there are those costs involved, but it doesn't affect the overall market for cattle and beef.
Obviously, the government is involved, but what role does Extension play?
Yeah, you know, I mean, from my standpoint, it's about talking about the market issues. I've had lots of questions about whether this is a market impact. It really isn't. So that's good news. Reassure consumers that there's no meat impacts that they should be worried about. On the ground, you know, Extension plays a pretty important role in that monitoring and supporting testing and submitting samples and those kinds of things to try to facilitate the on the ground, the boots on the ground kind of efforts to get control of this thing.
And finally, market concerns. Are there any?
Yeah, you know, from a market standpoint, there's not a lot of issues, and I've had questions about that. So no major market concerns. Like I said, the market was almost relieved just to get it over with, but we have to deal with it now.
This is Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today, purplewave.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Today I want to talk to you about how to try to find out the moisture in your hay.
University of Tennessee Extension Dyer County agent Terrell Davis.
Many moisture meters aren't very accurate, so here's a simple, easy way that you can do this at the house. Here's some things that we'll need. You'll need to take a grab sample of your hay out of the pasture before you bale it. Some sort of scale, whether that's a male scale, just any kind of scale will work. Today I have one that is made for weighing out food that will go into ounces and grams and pounds, even if I needed it. Note here that whatever dish you use needs to be microwave safe, so that's why I have an extra microwave safe bowl, and then our microwave. So the first thing we're going to do is to weigh out our sample. The instructions that I read mentioned doing 100 grams, which is a lot of hay. Almost a full bowl for me was 20 grams. So that's what I'm going to work with is 20 grams. And all we're going to do is grab our hay, and we need to make sure that we cut it so that it will actually fit in our bowl, and that will help our process a lot. So as I'm cutting it, I'll just describe the rest of the process. And that is that we're going to take our sample and we're going to put it in our microwave and we're going to set the timer on 5 minutes. Okay. And then we're going to weigh it again after 5 minutes and see the difference between our weight when we started and the weight when we ended. After that, I'll put it in the microwave for another minute or so, see if the weight changes any. If not, we know that we're pretty well at a constant stopping point for our hay, and then we will go through the formula after that. So just cut up your hay in small pieces. It's a messy job. Also an important note is that when we put this in the microwave, we need to make sure that we have a cup of water in the microwave, else you could have the chance of burning the hay and starting a nice smoke signal in the house. So this is some precautions of making sure that you have the water in the hay, okay? So after we have cut for a little bit, I'm going to turn my scale on and zero it out. You may not have a scale that zeros out, so you need to weigh your dish empty and then start weighing as you put it on. So I'm going to zero out and weigh. Okay, we're at 20 grams. And I'm going to set my hay into my microwavable safe dish, put it in the microwave. We're going to do that for 5 minutes, and we're going to leave it alone. Okay, so our 5 minutes is up, so we're going to take the hay out of the microwave. So I'll place it from the microwavable dish to the scale. At this time, I'm at 18 grams. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the hay back into the microwavable dish, and I'm going to microwave it for one more minute and see what our weight is after that. Okay, our second time to go in for 2 minutes this time, and we're going to check this out. So this is the second time we've done it since our initial first 5 minutes. We did 5 minutes, 1 minute, now 2 minutes. We're still at 17 grams, which means that we're holding steady at that point. So we started out with 20 grams. We got down to 17 grams. We subtract those and get 3. We divide 3 by 20 and we get 15%. So the hay that we have here is 15% moisture. So now that when I roll my bale, I know what I have. Hopefully this will be a tool that you can use in your own home, and it's much more accurate than a moisture meter.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.